Hello, and thank you for joining us for another session of Dedication. Fans, remember the Bay City Rollers, the only Bay City Rollers themed podcast in the world. Hosted by Bay City Roller Fan Events, I'm Suze, and with me, as always, is my ride or die, or is it ride and die? Ride or die,
Ride
Laura.
or die.
Hey, Laura, it's been a
Hey,
while.
it sure has, Suze, and I'm really excited about this one. I was totally unexpected, but it was awesome.
Yeah, it just kind of came into our midst, and we jumped on it. So that's good.
I think that that's what makes it so good is it was unexpected and it was just an awesome surprise.
Yeah, I really miss doing them. We haven't done one in a while, but things are opening up, and it's a little harder to get. Hey, when everyone was on lockdown, it was easy to schedule. We didn't
Absolutely.
get a lot of issues with scheduling, but now it's a little harder. But as they come up, we're going to still do them if people still want to hear them. So, anyway, today we have with us Phil Hendricks with from Les's legendary band. He is the guitarist, and he had chart success in the 80s with a pop punk band called The Stiffs from Blackburn, Lancashire. They had successful singles, Inside Out and Goodbye My Love. The band still appears today at punk and rock festivals all over Europe. Phil has also toured the world and performed with iconic acts like the Osmonds, the late Alan Merrill, Paper Lace, and the original Jukebox Heroes. For the past 10 years or so, Phil has been part of Les's legendary band, as we all know. His amazing guitar licks and stage presence and a little punk rock edge gave the old songs an edgier and more modern vibe. Phil was also part of the reunion gigs in 2015 and 16, and was on Les's final tour up in Canada just before COVID brought all the music and fun to a screeching halt. He and the rest of the legendary band, Darren Lee, Scott McGowan, Nikki Sixx, Gornall, and Alex Southgate, are playing a tribute concert this month honoring Les. We're going to talk about all of that with him and more. So, should we get him on the line?
Yes, we should.
Okay, here we go. Hello.
Hello. Is
Hi.
that
Hello.
Good morning. Good afternoon. The
can
only
you
what
hear
I knew about the time change is, well, my husband's from England and my boys are addicted to the Premier Soccer League. So we were able to watch it in live time now. And last
All right.
I was like, oh, this is a weird time. I said, nope, it's because they've changed their clocks so and we haven't yet.
Yeah, I don't know why they still do that. It just seems crazy. It just means it goes dark at 4 o'clock in the afternoon instead of five.
The dark days are upon us for sure.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us today. We're pretty excited.
That's all right. It's my pleasure.
Oh, good. All right. Well, so we just jump right in.
Yeah, go ahead.
Right. I'm Susan, by the way, and my co-host is Laura. So, and I'm from the Philadelphia area, and I'll let Laura talk.
All right, well, nice to meet both of you.
Hi, Phil. I'm Laura, and I am in Plymouth, Massachusetts.
Okay. Yep.
And through the miracle of technology, here we all are.
Yeah, that Massachusetts, that's where everywhere is named after a British town, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Pretty
Yeah.
much.
Yeah.
I was
Worcester, we have Worcester and Plymouth, and a lot of our Cape Cod towns are like English names.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because I live near Boston in England, and it's hard to believe if you go to Boston in England, it's hard to believe that the American one was named after this one.
Yes,
Because
exactly.
it's only a small town, really.
Oh, compared to the big city of Boston, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, rumor has it there's some big rock that they came to in Plymouth, isn't there?
I don't know.
Yeah, the Plymouth Rock, where the settlers came.
Ah, right. Yeah.
Yes, but the story is the Plymouth Rock that all the visitors get to see down at the waterfront technically isn't the rock that they touched upon when they first came to Plymouth. It's actually on a really small island in Plymouth Harbor, is
All
where
right.
the original Plymouth Rock is. Oh, and I can't remember. It has a different name too. It's called and I can't remember what it is, but anyway. But
Well,
for
you've
the
got
tourists.
a bogus rock made in China.
Exactly.
The PR machine was already in gear even back then.
So the one down at the waterfront is just for the tourists, but I think it's called Elephant Rock, and I've been to that on the little island out in Plymouth Harbor. So
Oh, great.
yeah, just a little historical fun fact about Plymouth.
That is the history portion of our segment today.
Well, I've learned something already.
Good. Well, we want to learn about you. So we're going to start at the beginning, if you don't mind. I
Okay.
mean, you're a working musician for many, many years. Do you remember, what song you heard or what group inspired you to say, "Oh, I've got to do that. That's what I want to do."
Well, I mean, we've got to go back to when I was probably 6 or 7 years old, stuck in the vinyl records up
Well, yeah.
on my mum and dad's record player, and I never knew who any of these artists were. My sister and I would just stack them up. You could stack them up on a spindle on the English record players, and they would plop down one by one and play. And I suddenly realized that these ones with the black RCA Victor label and an Elvis Presley written on them were the special ones. So they were a few years old at the time. They were my mum and dad's old records, but I mean, Stuck on You by Elvis was one of my favorites. I just thought it had some great magic to it.
There's never been anyone come along that has anywhere near that swag. I mean,
I know.
he just laid it down, and that's it forever, forever, forever.
Yeah, and I'm still listening to him.
It's timeless. His voice is timeless. His look is timeless. Everything about him is just—he's the king for sure, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Did you ever consider any other career path, or did you ever do anything else when you started?
Not for any length of time. I mean, my dad had a refrigeration company, and I think it was. I think my parents would have always liked me to follow on in the family business, but I had other ideas.
Oh yeah. When is the guitar the first instrument you learned to play, or what else do you play, if anything?
Guitar as it was the first and only one. I mean, I think I got my first one in 1973. My dad bought me a cheap guitar and a cheap little amplifier and a Bert Whedon Play in a Day book, which was the de facto, it was the book that all the kids had to learn to play back then. And I think I got to page four before I gave up on it. Just, I once I'd played She'll Be Coming Round the Mountain and John Brown's Body for a couple of weeks. I had enough of that.
So you learned really by yourself then, self-taught.
I looked at a few things in the book that I just spoke about, but and watched people on TV and listened and tried to fathom out how they did it.
Wow, that's pretty amazing to be self-taught.
Oh, I mean, it's the ear, isn't it? You have to have that. I mean, you're born with that, I think, don't you?
Well, I think so. I mean, people don't have to learn to read before they can speak. It's something that's either in you or it isn't, I think.
Yeah, I
I
agree.
can't read a note of music, but I can, and then somebody tells me the name of a guitar chord, and I think, what the heck is that? But I can play them without necessarily knowing the technicalities of it.
That's
I
pretty
mean,
amazing. That's like a really true born talent to be
it's a
able to
gift
do
for
that.
sure.
Absolutely.
Or maybe just a bit of luck.
I don't know about that. I mean, some people are like, I can't sew. I mean, not sewing machines. I cannot sew. I can read the books and see what they're doing, and I just don't have that hand for it, the finesse, whatever. So I admire anyone who knows what their calling is, if you will, and runs with it.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, I think music is all—it's all about the ears. You
It
can
is.
talk about the, I mean, there are musicians who can only play if they've got the sheet music in front of them. That it's quite odd, really. Some people do it by ear, some people do it by numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost sounds the same, so that's really incredible. Technical or ear, but the ear is essential for the listener and the performer. So
definitely. Yeah.
My ear is very talented, but that's where it ends.
Yeah.
So we'll fast forward a little bit. You were the lead singer, lead guitarist, and the principal songwriter for, I guess that's Pop Punky, The Stiffs. Tell us about, you know, forming that, the dynamics and the music scene during that time, and just what inspired that whole thing. Probably girls,
well,
right?
well, we formed the band in 1976, so I would have been, well, we all would have been 14 years old at the time. And we were trying to play songs like Highway Star by Deep Purple and like hopelessly failing. And we used to rehearse in and then a few months later the punk rock thing came along and we thought, well, we can do this and it's exciting. So we went down that avenue, but with a more of a pop edge.
Mm-hmm.
Was you know, I wrote songs with melodies because that, I mean, the rules were that there were no rules. So I thought, well, I could be more melodic than other bands can be. That's my rules.
Because there's not a lot of melody in punk, is there? I mean, It's music, but you can do it.
The original stuff there was, I mean, when you listen to bands like the Stranglers, you know, they went on to write great melodies. And even the Sex Pistols, you know, they did have tunes and they were exciting, basically rock and roll records, I suppose. Although over the years it's become somewhat, the whole punk thing has become. I don't know what's the word I'm trying to look for. It's just like
a, like demonized.
I've lost the ability to speak now.
It's only an interview, Phil.
Yeah.
I'm getting old. All of us. Don't worry. I've been told I can talk for anyone.
Yeah, I can talk for anyone, but I'm just suddenly like, I can't find the words I'm looking for.
Now, do you think like they're trying to not demonize it, but whatever they were doing to disco for many, many years? Oh, that was horrible. That was horrible. And now they're embracing it as being some of the greatest music, you know, in the 70s.
Well, you see, that was the thing for me. And my people my age hated disco. Well, the guys did, you know, we hated it. So punk was the great alternative for us.
Yeah, for sure.
And so we put this band together and we started doing a few shows. And by the time we were 17, we somehow landed a record deal with the biggest company in the UK. Which it didn't turn out as well as we expected. We did three or four singles that got a lot of airplay but didn't actually chart. So, you know, within a couple of years, we were without a record deal again, and then struggled on through the 80s, just playing live shows. We were doing, I don't know, 80, 90 live shows a year until we finally called it a day on that one.
But you still occasionally do shows, don't you, with the Stiffs? Or is that
We do because, of course, once you've reached the required vintage, you become cool again.
Absolutely. I'm waiting for that to happen. Yeah, no, that is very true. We get nostalgic for our music from our youth, don't we? Hence, you know, why we're all here today. What was the music scene like that during the time? Were you in the hardcore, like, punk clubs where, you know, people were being thrown about?
Where I was, which is in a town called Blackburn, Lancashire, most of the shows that we would see would be at the public, the main sort of public halls, the main theatre. And, you know, so there weren't a lot of seedy clubs where we lived. If we saw a concert, it was at the main hall. And it was a very exciting time because at that time, all the bands toured all the small towns, Nowadays, they play two or three selected venues in major cities, but at that time, they toured everywhere.
That's exciting. So you had to be like proper punks. Proper
Well,
night punk.
we couldn't even get the clothes in Blackburn, Lancashire. So, we just wear whatever we thought.
Wow.
We didn't, we weren't walking around with mohawks and the sort of general conception of what punks wear.
Yeah.
We'd have a pair of black jeans and a leather jacket. We'd probably look more like John Travolta in Grease than
Yeah.
than a punk.
Well, as long as it wasn't Saturday Night Fever, because that was disco, man. We can't have
Oh,
that.
no, that was
But that's
taboo.
kind of, dare I say, sweet. I mean, that's kind of it's legit because you weren't trying to pose, you were just playing the music.
Yeah, well, we didn't have any options.
Yeah. Would you have rocked the Mohawk, Phil, if you could?
No, not I, in England, that look came 3 or 4 years after the punk new wave movement started, and that just became a like a not a sanitized version, but almost a caricature version.
So that really wasn't legitimate, if you will.
No,
I mean that.
the Mohawks didn't. I mean, we're talking about in 1977 was the big year for punk rock in England,
Yeah.
but that Mohawk thing started coming in round about 80, 81.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean,
But
you'd probably get a
those were all
different.
the images that we would see over here,
Oh,
where the
absolutely.
studs, the mohawks, the different colored hair, and just the roughness of it. It was exciting.
Yeah, but it's almost as if that's become a symbol of what the punk thing was, which I don't think it really was in its beginnings.
Yeah. That's
Interesting.
interesting. That is interesting. All right, let's talk about Original Jukebox Heroes. That was formed in what, 20 2005, and they're basically a power band featuring, we're going to call you, glam rock superstars.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, for starters, I didn't join it till 2013 or 14. So I don't know exactly when they started. I think they'd only done an odd show here and there. But it was Original Jukebox Heroes. It's members of second generation members of 70s glam rock bands,
I see.
really. So,
Okay.
for example, Jeff Brown, who does a lot of the lead vocals, he was a member of the Sweet, but not in their heyday during the 90s. And we have well, we did have Phil Wright from Paper Lace, who was the original lead singer with Paper Lace. We had Steve Worley, who was a 90s member of Slade, and myself, who had done 10 years in various formations of Eric Faulkner's Bay City Rollers or Les McEwan's Bay City Rollers. So in that respect, we were mostly second generation members.
I understand. So what kind of shows and venues, what audiences do you play to in that band?
Well, we do a lot of shows in Belgium and Germany, oddly enough, and the ones we do in Belgium tend to be town festivals during the summer. A lot of these European towns have annual festivals in a market square where they have, five or six acts on, and they're really great events. So we do a lot of those, and then recently, well, not that recently, 2 years ago, we did a German theatre tour in sort of what used to be East Germany, municipal theatres, and then we all do also do these 70s weekenders that they have over in the UK, where a holiday park will host a 3 day event and have five or six bands on per day, and they get a couple of thousand people at these events.
There's still such a hunger for that era of music. I mean, arguably the greatest era, 60s and 70s, if you were to ask me. There's still such a powerful hunger for that.
Well, nostalgia is a big thing, really. It's you know, to be transported back to a time where you were at your happiest in your youth.
One of my sons listens to 70s music, and he's like, there's nothing like that. He does listen to modern music, but he reverts back to, you know, my music almost. It's interesting.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, my daughter's 27. She loves 80s music, 70s music. They find this stuff themselves.
Yeah.
We haven't forced it upon her, but they look around and find it, and they go, well, I like this stuff better than the modern stuff.
I won't say which son, but one day he comes running in saying, Mom, yeah, you've got to hear this music. You've got to hear this guy. And he starts playing me, and I kid you not, Andy Gibb. And I'm like,
no.
Do you not think I know who, I don't know who Andy Gibb is? He's like, this guy's legit. This is amazing. This song. He just like went on an Andy Gibb fix. I said, now you got to find the other brothers. And he just went down that rabbit hole, and he's like, why have you not told me? I said, son, I had told you about these people. Yeah. But it was just, great. It made my heart soar.
the nice thing is they find the music, and they don't have any preconceptions about it. They just hear it and go,
they just like it. Exactly. But it was a good day in our house when that happened.
That is so awesome. I love that.
So who were, besides Elvis, of course, because he's definitely at the top of the throne, who were some of your other favorite 70s acts and songs?
Well, it's funny because I was thinking about this, and ironically, I think about 1971, when I was 9 years old, I was the first time I started looking at buying records or asking my mother to buy them for me. And some of the first ones were records by Dawn, Tony Orlando and Dawn.
All right.
I loved What Are You Doing Sunday. That was one of my favorites. And Keep on Dancing by the Bay City Rollers, which was the original Bay City Rollers prior to the 3 years prior to the popular
line. Yeah.
So they had this hit, Keep on Dancing, which I think my mother and my grandma bought it for me, and then disappeared for 3 years, which was quite weird. So I always remember thinking, I wonder what happened to that band I liked. And then 3 years later,
we're all connected, Phil. We're all connected.
Well, they had the hit Keep on Dancing, and then three flops that you didn't even hear on the radio. I mean, Saturday Night was a flop in England, with the original singer Nobby Clark in 73, I think it was. And then it went on to be a number one in the States when it was revoiced by Les McEwen a couple of years later.
But that's where we came in to the picture.
Well, you kind of got them a year or two later than the big hits in England.
Yeah, that's right.
For sure.
So in a few years' time, it's going to be the 50th anniversary in the UK.
Wow.
Yeah, that's so brilliant.
Well, it's already the 50th anniversary of Keep on Dancing in the UK.
There you go. That's right. Well, okay, speaking about, you know, 70s acts and Bay City Rollers, let's talk Bay City Rollers. Well, prior to performing, we know you as Les and his Legendaries. You also played with Eric, as you mentioned Eric earlier.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about playing with Eric, and then how you became, you know, a legendary.
Well, funnily enough, the reason I ended up even talking to Eric in the first place was one of the things I do is write sleeve notes for reissue CDs, and I'd been asked to write sleeve notes for the three CDs that Eric and the rest of the Rollers recorded immediately after Les McEwen left or was sacked or whatever happened.
Mm-hmm.
So during the course of my speaking to Eric about this, he said he was looking for a new band and he wanted something with a little more of a funky edge. So I said, well, I'm your man.
Yeah.
And And he asked me that I think that was in 2007. Then he offered me a few dates, and I couldn't do them. I was busy. But then in 2008, he asked me to play. He had a lot of dates in Germany, town festivals, what they call oldie nights with various other 70s bands. And so I went down to London and rehearsed for a day with him, and then jumped on the plane at 6 o'clock the next morning and flew out to Germany.
Wow. Oh, wow.
And so that was fun. I mean, I did 3 years with Eric. But, Eric, he doesn't have much of an internet presence. And,
right.
And his gigs were a little bit sporadic. There'd be one here and one there. And, I was having to take a whole weekend out to do one show in Germany, because you've got to fly out one day and fly home the next day. So your whole weekend was gone. And then in 2011, I was playing with my wife's band as second on the bill to Les McEwan's Bay City Rollers at a festival in England. And a few days after that, I was asked if I'd join Les's band. Well, at the time, I was still in Eric's band. So I don't know if you know this, but Les and Eric were probably not the best of friends.
No. Joking, Phil.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. We're not the best of friends.
Yeah.
So I texted Eric and said I've been asked to play in Les's band. And the phone rang about 10 minutes later, and it was the full sort of hairdryer treatment on the phone. Basically, Eric was shouting and bawling, saying, "Well, you do what you want, but you're not playing in both bands." And I said, "Well, Eric, Les has got a lot of tour dates, and I can't afford not to do this." And so that was how that switch occurred. I didn't leave Eric's band, but he said, "You're not doing the both of them at the same time."
Yeah, it's which like
understandable.
You're a working musician. You got to work.
Well,
you know,
that was the decision I had to make, and it wasn't a decision I took lightly. But it was a dozen gigs a year compared to 60 or 70 gigs a year. Yeah. So it was
right.
Yeah,
and I'm sure he understands that, really.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
but do you remember the first time you played as part of Les's band? What do you remember the city and what the audience was like?
I do remember it was Dublin, and I was supposed to have a rehearsal with the band a week earlier, and that was cancelled. So I did the show without a rehearsal.
Oh wow.
I was terrified, and not only that, but you're stepping into the shoes of I think it was Mike Koch who I replaced, and Mike had been with Les for a good few years, so you're kind of aware that you're replacing somebody who was quite popular, and feeling a little bit ill at ease. And hoping that you're going to play everything right. So that was my experience of the first gig. Although I do remember it was a good show and the crowd went wild.
And you smashed it. Come on, you know you did.
Well, I think so. I mean, I kept the job for 10 years.
Yeah. I think you definitely won a lot of fans over, for sure. How do you think the audience changed over the years from that first show in Dublin?
Well, they got 10 years older.
Yeah, but we don't look it.
no detectable physical difference.
Exactly. Well, I guess, I mean, was it already the numbers? Because I know the crowds kept getting bigger and bigger every year. I mean, and I attended a couple of Les's shows before the Legendaries, and they were, with smaller venues.
Right.
Then all of a sudden playing these gigantic venues.
I think the continuous touring year after year and trying to improve his show was paying dividends. When he had a hardcore nucleus of fans, you would find a lot of fans would come to a lot of several shows on a tour. But also there was an increase in the people who were just going, oh, that sounds like a good night. The ones that you wouldn't see at every show,
Sure.
that was growing as well.
Well, I mean, not for nothing, but Les worked. I mean, he worked. He never stopped. His shows and their popularity, like you said, really reflected that. Were you
Oh, absolutely.
surprised initially by, well, his showmanship and the popularity
Well,
of
it
those
was
shows?
a great front man, and I think hard work was became his coping mechanism for helping him get over the alcoholism. He just kept himself busy all the time, and when we did a tour, he had all the information. He took care of the hotels and everything, and you would have all the information, what time you got to arrive. The name of the guy who's doing the lights, the name of the guy who's doing the sound, the hotels. He did everything, and it must have been a well, it was a full-time job for sure.
Yeah. Well, they do say if you have problems with addiction, you replace one addiction with another, and hopefully the next one is a healthy one, which
Yes,
working is certainly healthy.
I think that's probably what went on there after
Yeah.
he did the celebrity rehab TV show. He came out of that, and I mean that was before I met him, a couple of years before I met him, but he came out of that with a gusto and a lust for life, I think.
Yeah, he was certainly unstoppable, you know.
Yeah.
I really respected his work ethic.
Oh, you couldn't fault him on that, no.
Yeah, for sure. And everyone, I mean, they say that about him. He definitely put in the work. He was not
Yeah.
a diva just coming through, breezing through and singing a couple songs and breezing off again.
No, I think he'd love to be out on the road, to be honest.
Yeah.
Maybe the 15 months of not doing it weren't very good for him during the lockdown.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, for a lot of
Although,
people, but yeah, you
I
could
mean,
see it happening.
the last time I spoke to him, which was about 10 days before he died, he just sounded great and excited, and he was looking forward to touring. He said, "Oh, we're gonna do a 40-day tour of the UK, then we're going to Japan and Australia." He was excited.
You
That
just
was
gave
why
me.
it came as such a shock.
You sounded just like him.
It just gave me chills when you were impersonating him.
Wow.
I was like, it sounded just like him. I know I'm getting we can never get through one of these without getting Tim misty-eyed. We try, but we fail.
Don't you start.
I know. All right, let's talk about something fun for a couple seconds. Tell us
right, yeah.
about the fan experience, if you will. You know, these women who are just throwing themselves at you. What do you make of that? I mean, sometimes you go to these shows and you really are transported to being 12 again, and you look around and you're like, what is going on here?
The audience interaction was great, and Les knew how to play up to that,
Oh, for sure.
that was part of the Rollers show. But also people saw these as events. They made friends through this
Yes.
sort of network, and people met up. They traveled, a couple of 100 miles to a show to meet their friends, and that was always a great atmosphere. In fact, I remember one time we were in Canada. This is about 2014, and we played Casino-rama. I'm
Oh
trying to remember.
yeah.
Where
In
is that?
Canada.
Orillia. And it was incredible because the place was sold out, and it was a, I think, 3 or 4,000 seater.
That is a big venue. Yeah.
Wow. At that time, Les used to do a meet and greet, just a general meet and greet at the end of the show. And I think the entire audience came through this meet and greet because we were standing there for an hour and a half, and then I thought, some of these people are coming back again.
Oh.
And
Oh.
we were looking at our watches going, "What? Man, the bar's closing in 10 minutes."
Yeah. Oh, well, that's what it's about when you're legendary. That comes with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you do have some pretty voracious fans. It's fun. It's fun to see, you know. And they're all having a good time. All right. Well, Laura and I both, and a bunch of our friends, you talk about traveling hundreds of miles. We were up in Nova Scotia during that last tour, and we saw the first three shows. Almost every day we say how happy we are that we made that trip. I mean, it wasn't without lots of discussion because things were starting to happen, you know. But we said, "Oh, it will be fine. Let's do it." And boy, that was my last concert before, and then everything shut down. Tell us what those days were like for you guys, and what, as things were really starting to shut down, what was going on with you guys, and how did you get back home?
Well, we were really enjoying it. We were getting to see some great places, and we weren't taking a great deal of notice of the news. There'd been a lot of talk about the coronavirus before we left, but we thought, Canada, that's miles away from China. We're going to be all right there. We were driving around, not watching the TV much, not hearing any news, and just enjoying the shows. And then we were in Toronto, and I can't remember the name of the last venue that we were due to play. But we'd set the equipment up, we'd done a sound check, and we were just about to go and grab something to eat before the show. And then the theatre manager came, oh no, it was Les, came through and said, "Guys, I've just been told that the theatre's got to close, so pack the gear up, we're going." We were devastated. I mean,
Yeah,
we
I kind
didn't
of think I
know.
remember he was posting pictures or something of sound check or something that day.
Yes, he was.
And
Yeah, yeah.
So when they said it was canceled, we're like, no, it's not. He just he was just posting pictures. So yeah, that was
I know. I mean, that was such a downer. But at that stage, we didn't know if that was just a Toronto rule, or whether that was
oh,
going to be
true.
Canada wide. We thought, oh well, we'll just carry on. In fact, Les said, "Well, look, we carry on. We fulfill our contracts, and unless somebody says it's not happening." When we woke up the following morning, on the social media, people were posting, "Oh, this show's been cancelled. That show's been cancelled." And I'm not sure if Les had even been officially notified at that point that all these shows were being pulled.
Oh, wow.
So he said, "Well, that's it. It looks like it's over." We had a few frantic phone calls, and he said, "Well, we'll drive to the airport and see if we can get a flight home, because the next thing is, if Canada goes into lockdown or what, depending on what happens in the UK, we may not be able to get home.
Exactly.
So we need to go now, fast." So we went up to the airport in Toronto and hung around for 6 hours until they could put us on a flight, and that was the end of that.
So you were probably on one of the last flights that left.
Maybe so. I think that was about the 13th or 14th of March. I can't remember specifically, but there were a lot of people at the airport, and a lot of people queuing up trying to change flight details.
It was
And of course,
eerie. I flew into Newark, which is New York Airport, and I was on a plane with only two other people on it. So it was starting to really hit me on the way home, like, wow, this might have been really foolish to come and do this, because it really hit me when you're seeing a pretty vacant airport and an empty plane. And then we're flying over Manhattan, and the turnpikes and the roadways are empty, and you never see that. It this gave me such a it was just such an ominous feeling flying in, landing, and boy, then within days everything changed, obviously.
Well, it sounds like you had a similar experience, because when we flew back, We were on an empty plane. We had a whole row of seats each to lie down on.
I mean, it was the strangest thing, you know. You're used to just being completely uncomfortable, and here you have the run of the plane, pretty much.
Yeah.
And that was, Laura, that was your first time ever seeing Les perform, wasn't it?
It was. I had been a Bay City Roller fan, you know, since I was like 12 or 13. And they did come to Boston, I think, at least twice. But my parents would not, in spite of all of my crying and begging and pleading, not take me to the show. They were deathly afraid of, like, they knew it was just thousands of screaming girls, and they were, you know, hysterical screaming girls. So my parents wouldn't take me. And when we found out that you guys were coming to Canada, and in spite of it being March, we said, like, we have to go, because I've never seen Les perform ever. And and we got to go to those first three shows.
Oh, don't you start now.
And honestly, I was 12 again. It was so much fun.
Magical.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And, you know, it was
really magical.
And why we chose those particular dates were because we wanted to go see where Anna Green Gables was inspired. So, you know, we combined that with Bay City Rollers and Anna Green Gables. It was just, we were freezing cold. The whole place was shut down. Everything was closed for the season. You had a hard time getting a cup of coffee, but it was so magical. I mean, even the freezing coldness was magical, you know. And it was a beautiful place.
One of our friends, Audrey, actually flew from England to Canada to come to these shows with us, because she also loved Green Gables and she loves the Bay City Rollers. But she met up with us. And, you know, so here we are, a bunch of friends from literally everywhere meeting up in Canada. And it was a wonderful, wonderful trip. And I am so grateful that we went.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, I'm glad. We were really enjoying that. We were, you know, all the guys in the band, we were laughing all the time, and the tour was going well. And
it was fun.
It really was.
So thank you for that. That was, if that were to be our last, you know, concerts ever, we ended on. For me, it was my very first concert was the Bay City Rollers, and if that was to be my last one, it was full circle. But thankfully, things are opening up again. I've seen some other shows, but that was definitely a magical week.
I'm glad you got to see him eventually.
It was totally worth it.
So Phil, tell us about the event at Viva Blackpool. I mean, it's going to be a very special event, but I want you to tell us about it. How did it all come about, and what can the audience that's attending expect?
Well, shortly after Les died, you know, Les would have been doing a tour right now, and the Viva Blackpool show would have been one of the dates. I think it had already been moved from 2020, you know, rescheduled. But within a few days of Les's passing, they were advertising that they were going to put a Rollers tribute on the Roller Maniacs or something, and a lot of the fans were, I think they thought it was distasteful.
For sure.
And wanted their a lot of people were demanding a refund. And then there seemed to be a bit of a groundswell of people saying, well, why don't they ask Les's band, The Legendaries, to do it? That's what the fans used to refer to as the Legendaries.
So it was fan driven?
Yeah. We weren't sitting there plotting to go back on the road. It was the fans were posting on social media, and I said at some point, well, it would be nice if they'd asked us. And lo and behold, a week or so later, they asked us if we could, or if we would be prepared to do it. So spoke to the guys, and we all thought, well, yeah, if people want us to do it, then let's do it, and let's make it a celebration in memoriam of Les.
Wow.
That's wonderful. I didn't realize that it was, you know, fan based. That's wonderful. I mean, that's we do
Yeah,
have a power that we don't always use for good. This is an example.
It was the fans lobbying the venue, really.
That's fantastic.
Awesome. I love that.
So tell us the lineup. And I think I know everyone's name, but I don't want to get it wrong.
Well, it's the last lineup of Les's Rollers, which is myself, Nick Gornall on bass, Scott McGowan on guitar. Of course, Scott was with Les for donkey's years.
Mm-hmm.
Darren Lee on drums.
Yeah.
And Alex Southgate on keyboards. And Alex is another, he'd been around for years, on and off.
What can the audience expect? Who's gonna take over? Are you gonna share the singing? Or I know you're a lead singer. Will you be doing the vocals?
Yeah, we're doing about half and half, but sharing it between myself and Scott.
That's exciting. How do you feel about it? I mean, it's a lot of emotions going on, I'm sure. Are you nervous about it, or are you just?
I can't pretend that I'm not nervous about it because, you know, it's quite a. Well, as you say, it's going to be an emotional thing for a lot of people, and we want to be right.
Yeah, you will be enveloped in a lot of love, Phil. I mean, I can imagine what that room's going to feel like. I think it's going to be very special.
I
hope so. I'm sure we'll have a great night. But we're just going to be rocking out the Rollers hits.
Will it be going to be awesome?
Is this going to be a one-off, or are you thinking about doing, you know, some more of these?
Well, since this has cropped up, we've already been asked to do a couple more. I mean, we've got one at a Butlins holiday resort. They do a 70s weekend several times a year, and they regularly get 3,000 or 4,000 people there. So we've got one of those coming up in Skegness in March, and another holiday resort called Vauxhall Holiday Camp in Great Yarmouth in May. So if people want us to do it, we'll keep doing it.
Well, I mean, you are now, you know, the baton's been handed over. Do you know what I mean? I mean, you're keeping the music alive.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's, you know, we either stop and that's the end of it, or
right,
we carry on and keep the music alive and have a bit of fun doing it.
And keep it alive where it's good music. I mean, anyone can, of course, you know, be a cover band or whatnot, but you guys have legitimacy. You perform with him for years. You know the music, you know.
Of course, yeah.
So we want it to be done well. We don't want a caricature of...
No, I know. We're doing mainly what Les's show had developed into, but you know, of course, there are going to be some naysayers, who, and there are. They will say, "Well, it's not going to be the same without Les." Of course, it isn't.
Yeah, but, how could it be?
It can't be.
Right, but you can still do him justice, and he would not want you to stop. Sorry, Laura.
Oh, and pay tribute to
absolutely
him by carrying.
Well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's all we can hope to do, and try and do it well.
Oh, you guys will absolutely do it well. I think you're the perfect people to keep the music alive.
Yeah, well, hopefully on this end of the, on this side of the pond, we can see some video and things so we can kind of feel like we're part of it as well.
I hope so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Phil, tell us about some of your current projects. I know you have a new album out, a new single dropped recently. Do you have any other dates with your other incantations and bands, other news? And how can people find you and your music?
Well, yeah, but as you say, I put my first solo album out last year called Radio Calling, and it's done really well, especially with airplay on independent radio stations. And then over the last few months, I did a single called King of Hearts, which it was number one in a what they call the heritage chart over here.
Mm-hmm.
Which is,
yeah, that's a great song.
Amazing. I can't believe it. And I've just released a new single, which is a duet with my wife, Michelle, called Silently. They're all available on all the regular digital things, the Spotify, iTunes, Apple. The best way for the artists these days is a site called Bandcamp.
Oh, yeah.
Simply because you can buy it either on, like, for example, my album, you could buy it digitally or on CD. And they pay the artist within a week or two. So,
oh, that's nice.
That's awesome.
I mean, digital right now is the way to go with the post office situation and postage prices going crazy. It really does pay literally and figuratively to have a download option. And then we get it right away. So it's instant gratification.
And the download comes coronavirus free.
Nice. That's right. It does.
But I've forgotten what the question was now. that's where you can find the album. As for other things that I'm doing, I'm all over the place. My wife has a Blondie tribute band, so we were out last night in a town called Grimsby doing a show, and I've got some more shows. Well, I haven't said that I did tour with Meryl Osmond.
I saw that. I saw mm-hmm. a post about that on Facebook. How was that?
That was great. I mean, he's a lovely guy, and what an honor to work with Meryl Osmond.
Absolutely.
and play "Love Me for a Reason" and "Crazy Horses."
My favorite songs, "Love Me for a Reason." I love that.
Yeah, "Crazy Horses." Right. They were ahead of their time.
Well,
that song rocks.
They don't get the plaudits that they deserve because they were a very talented bunch of guys, the Osmonds.
They really were. I watched some of the videos of them in their jumpsuits and their dance moves. Like, I mean, that was a lot of time put into that, and they don't miss a beat. They were just incredible. They're so much fun to watch. I mean, it might not have been cool when I was 13 to say that, but I really appreciate, you know, what was going on production wise, because now look what we have to look at. It's all just, it's all theater and inauthentic in a way, if you know what I mean, where they were just doing it.
I exactly like you say, I've watched some clips, you know, one minute they're on the Andy Williams show ice skating and singing, and the next week they're riding a damn unicycle or something and singing.
Right. There was nothing they couldn't do. And, you picture them in their living room practicing these, you know, these choreographed moves. I mean, just incredible. And they could sing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, they have beautiful vocals. Really beautiful. Anyway. Yeah, we have definitely appreciation of the Osmonds for sure.
Well, back to where I was. I've got a couple more shows coming up with Meryl at the end of November and the beginning of December.
Oh, that's great!
And
feel free to plug them.
I can't remember all the dates.
Well, Phil, we'll put links up for you.
Do you have a website where people can see where you're playing, or do you post all that information on your Facebook page?
Well, when I remember, I post it on my Facebook page.
Okay.
But you know, when you post something on Facebook, people tag you in things, and then the next thing you post has been shunted about three yards down the page.
True.
Would you like us to manage you, Phil?
I'm
not kidding. Suze is a whiz at promotion. If you need somebody for promo, you see Suze.
No, it's just for fun. We're not professionals, as you can clearly determine.
Yeah, but you know, it's always easier if somebody else promotes you than trying to promote yourself, because you can come across as being some conceited guy.
You'll have to go and elicit your number one fan, and figure out who that is, and then give them the job, because that'll be a labor of love.
Yeah, but I haven't got time in the day to do websites as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. You should be concentrating on the art.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not the work. Well, Phil, thank you so much for sitting with us. It was a lot of fun, and I learned a lot of, that I didn't know. So I appreciate that.
Oh, it's been a pleasure talking to you
Thank
both.
you. Yeah. And thank you again for those Canadian dates. We talk about it often, and we're so grateful that we were able to do that.
Oh, gosh,
Wow.
absolutely.
And we are so sorry for your loss. I'm going to try not to be emotional, but it's a huge loss for so many people. But I mean, for people who knew him personally, I just can't even imagine.
Well, thanks very much for that. It's appreciated.
Yeah, give our love to everyone, okay?
Will do. Yeah.
All right, we'll talk soon.
Okay, all the best. Thank you.
All right, take care, Phil. Thanks so much.
Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks again to Phil. It was so nice to speak to him and to learn a bit more about him. We hope you all have as well. What a lovely guy. For more information about the show in Blackpool, it's The Legendaries, a celebration of Les McEwen's Bay City Rollers. It's November 18th at Viva Blackpool, and you can find more information about that show at vivablackpool.com. Thank you all for listening, and remember to not only keep on rolling, but to keep on dancing.
Keep on dancing. Keep on doing the jerk. Shake it, baby. Come on and show me how you work. Now you're in motion. That's another train of locomotion. Yeah. That's another train. Don't you hurry me on. Shake it till it's in the day. Keep on dancing and a prancing. Keep on dancing and a prancing. Keep on dancing and a prancing.